Hello everyone, welcome to Darren Matthews and Sometimes Friends, the podcast where I speak to people much more interesting than myself. Please enjoy. Hello everyone, welcome to this edition of Darren Matthews and Sometimes Friends, the podcast where I talk to people much more interesting than myself. I'm joined today by, I thought we'd mix it up a bit, so instead of getting somebody who's just another comedian friend of mine, we're going to talk to somebody who is primarily in the performing arts, the theatre darling, the television. You might have seen her in films. It is Diona Doherty. Hello, Diona.
Hello, what's crack? No, love the way my introduction there was like, I've gone a different direction. I've not brought anybody interesting on. It's just Diona.
No, you're all good. I thought we'd sort of mix it up a wee bit. But one of the things is you also do comedy. So this is the new thread to your bow.
Yeah, triple threat. Comedy, acting, DIY.
Is that how you've been entertaining yourself now that there's obviously no productions can happen?
Yeah, I love a bit of DIY. I think I repaint my house top to bottom 3 times a year. Well, yeah, probably 3 times a year, like completely redecorate.
My husband must be delighted when you're like, here's a list, let's do it.
Yeah, well, I think he tends to stick to the stuff. Like, he's currently at the back nailing a tarpaulin to the wall, trying to make a roof for our hot tub, and I'll leave him to that.
So, folks, if you're ever wondering if there's good money in the comedy, apparently for fucking Fiona, it's because her and the husband's putting hot tubs out the back. What's the crack?
Yeah, but note the fact that we're making a real shitty makeshift roof with a $2.99 tarpaulin from Home Bargain, so...
Yeah, so that you can sit in the hot tub in the pissing rain.
Yeah. Yeah, it's where all of the self-employment grant went, on a hot tub.
Brilliant. Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, Diona, your primary income is, so I'm a real person who does comedy and has a podcast. Yeah. Your real people job is fucking
acting, scraping
a living out of being an actor, you know what I mean?
I know. And do you know what? I am so grateful that I didn't move to London when everyone did, like 10 years ago. There was just this big... feared that there was never going to be enough acting or performing work in the north, so everyone was moving to London thinking, or maybe Manchester as well, thinking that's where they had to go, and I didn't. And at the time it was genuinely just because I had a boyfriend. I was like, I can't leave him. But I'm so glad that, not that I stayed because of him, but that I stayed because there's an abundance of work now, and I've spent years doing the graft here of building relationships with different production companies and directors and writers and stuff. So it worked out well for me. So for those couple of years that I sat crying into my Instagram watching people live that London life, I'm like smug now because they've all had to come home and get normal people jobs. And I'm like, I've got a hot tub.
I have a couple of friends who work in production, not in front of the camera such as yourself, but a good mate of mine, a guy called Gino Lynch, he's a gaffer. And he was basically saying, there's been loads of work on. He's actually, John and Susan Lynch, it's their nephew. They all work in. And obviously their other niece was in Derry Girls, which you were also in. Also, how did you end up being the only person in Derry Girls from Derry who didn't have to do a Derry accent?
By not looking 16. That's how. I originally auditioned for Michelle.
Yeah.
But they were like, Diona, you're like something from the Amazon. Like, I'm 5'11" nearly. They were like, it's not going to work. All these we need sort of girls, because the girls are all older, you know, two of the girls are older than me. But they just get away with looking really young, which means they'll have a longer career. But my days of playing teenagers are gone. I think by the time I got on TV, my teenage playing years were done and I was into the 20s. But because I played this big foreign Ukrainian, they were like, nah, it doesn't matter what she's just a big foreign Ukrainian weirdo. So it's grand that she doesn't look 16. Like, no one's going to question it.
I just love the idea of whenever the director says cut, you just switch back into Diona mode. Or are you like a method actor where you're wandering around with this mental accent all day on set? Yes, no, coffee, no sugar, thank you.
I'd love to be like that. You'd get away with so much shit. The stuff Jim Carrey's gotten away with, I'd just like being like, no, I'm method acting, I can punch you in the fucking face. I would love to have been like that, but I'm not that committed. I'm a lazy actor. Like, no, I'm just going to say my lines.
Does that come from a sense of like formal training? Are there people who get really into it and then there's other people who are like, this is my job and I really enjoy it and I'm just reading words off a page? I don't understand the performing arts in that way.
there's a really famous phrase, and I don't know who said it, that's how famous it is. Just say the lines, and that's it. Like, don't make a big fuss about it, just say the fucking lines.
Yeah.
And that is an ethos that lots of actors live up to, but then there are people, and I'm not dissing people who do method acting, I just don't understand how you could commit that much, you know, that's just insane. I don't know if it's a bit self-indulgent or it genuinely helps people. I think some people struggle with cut and then going, so anyway, Maggie, are you gonna go out for lunch? Do you know what I mean? Like the in-between bits where you want to stay in character. And I know that's particularly hard when you're doing drama. Like, you know, if you're crying and you're like, oh, my child's just been abducted, and then you're like, so Barbara, I'll have the tuna fish sandwich. And you know what I mean? So it's a bit hard to like swap in and out of that. So you might want to stay in that. For comedy, I think it's a lot easier. Like nobody's like staying in, like, who's method acting to like being friends? Wise up.
Well, you know, I mean, the thing is as well, though, you don't particularly, you're not pigeonholed into one particular type of movie or TV. You're like, I'm a job and actor, what's the part? I'll give it a swing. Yeah. You know what I mean? So you're doing drama, you're doing comedy, you've been in horror movies, you know what I mean?
I've been in Irish language, two Irish language movies. I don't even speak Irish.
Did you have like a dialect coach? Did you have to like learn phonetically?
Yeah. So I do have a grasp of the Irish language. I did it at school. My brother's also an Irish, he's a translator, an Irish language translator. So he's fluent, obviously. And I did it in school as much as anybody did. In the North, we don't do it from P1. Like, I did an A level in Irish. Do you know what I mean? Got an A, but whatever. Like, I'm not bringing out my certificate, but it's fine. So I had a grasp of Irish. I still have a grasp of Irish. The Irish language speaking network of actors is very limited. So sometimes they reach out to actors who don't necessarily have a fluent grasp of the language, but can learn the lines. So I played the female lead in a 1916 uprising movie called Penance that was shot in Donegal 3 years ago. That is really good. And I just, for 6 weeks, shot that and just learned the lines. Just said the lines, darn.
Just read the lines.
Just fucking said the lines.
We have our first callback of the episode.
Yeah. And then I was asked to audition for another one this past year at some point. And I said, no, it's an extreme amount of work for me to do a movie or anything in Irish. It's a lot more than somebody who speaks Irish. It's a lot more, you know what I mean? It's already a lot of work learning your lines and, you know, doing the character work and being on set. That's already a lot of work. And I was just like, oh, I can't be bothered to do it again. So I said no that time. And also it was the lead, the full lead. There wasn't a male lead and a female lead. It was the lead. And I was like, no, that's just too much pressure. And I genuinely was holding my agent, if they want me on for like a day to do like a wee bit part, I'll do that because that'll be a bit of crack. But
yeah,
I'm not feeling up to being able to pull off the full lead in an Irish language movie. Like, although, to be honest, like, if any actors out there who have a grasp of Irish, I would say fucking get your lessons, like learn more of it. There's a full industry there that's crying out for actors who have an ability to speak Irish.
I'm trying to think, was the drama on T.G. Carr, was it Ross na Run? Was that the...
Yeah, there was the Ross na Run, yeah. I don't know if that still runs, does it?
Is that a pun on Ross na Run?
It wasn't, but I'm just so talented, darn.
I know. I have this weird thing, I have this kind of secret shame about being shite at Irish because, being an Irish person and people are like, do you speak the language? I'm like, eh, Rudbug Gaelic. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know.
You're saying, obviously, any language after the age of 9, I think, they reckon for a child, it's always a second language. You're never going to have full fluency. Or yeah. You will, but you'll be thinking about what you're saying. We learn conversational. The thing is, so whenever you start learning it in high school, if you go to like the Catholic high school in the North, you will be taught Irish for the first 3 or 4 years and you can decide whether to ditch it. I started learning Irish in primary 5 because my teacher was definitely in the Ra. So he So in South Armagh,
what sort of
he was like,
stuff were you learning? Like petrol bomb and like, you know, you were like, this is how you say bread. This is how you say petrol bomb.
Yeah. You're just like, Molotov's not even an Irish word. Why are you teaching Molotov cocktail? You know what I mean? One of my favorite things about the Irish language when I was learning it was that because it's such an ancient language, when there's a modern word comes up, they're just like, there's like a wee council that gathers and you either just say it in English or there's like somebody decides what it's going to be called and they make it sound Irish.
Yeah. That's class. I know someone who works on that committee.
Is that their job?
Garage. Yeah, they're part of it. It's not, it's a voluntary thing. I can't remember what you call the group. See, I did a one-woman show a few years ago in Belfast and in New York called Alice Milligan, and it was about the Irish language Protestant unionist, but Irish language activist, Alice Milligan. And who was like really good friends with like Yeats, and she just had this incredible life. And there was bits of Irish in it because she taught herself Irish. And in that, I learned about that group who make up those words and stuff. And to be honest, they're not even that. I don't think they put that much effort into it because they just be like, Wi-Fi, we'll put a fada on it. Wi-Fi, that's it.
My favorite one was whenever we were learning the school subjects. The one that always sticks out in my brain was whenever you're talking about the subjects you do in school, technology, technoliact. It just sounds Irish. That's yeah. It. I was like, is that it?
Just put an oct on the end. I know. And even my brother, because he speaks Irish and he's raising his kids, they're bilingual. He's raising his kids. What a man. Who did he finish this? He's raising his kids, you know. And they speak Irish. But he was saying to me even about, I can't remember the bloody word now, but it's something about how a system of a language, like the way we have, like Darren, for instance, my brother's called Darren. So Darren is an English way of writing, of phrasing. Do you know what I mean? Like the way we're talking about there, you can put like an oct on the end or an idge on the end of something and it just sounds more Irish. The way all our street names and like town names have been anglicized to look more English out of the Irish word, that they've done that with names. So Darren's your fucking slave name, mate, sorry to tell you.
Is there an Irish version of this? What's your brother's name? What does he call himself?
Darren, Darren.
Oh, right. Because my teachers used to just go, they go, what's your name? And I go, Darren Matthews. And they would go, Darren O'Matthew. So it's just Darren, son of Matthew, which is what the name means. But I was like,
yeah,
that seems like you haven't put in much fucking effort in that one, boys. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Look, my dad's not called Matthew.
Well, no, I had that as well. No, it was such a weird thing to do that. But as you're saying, like, I did not realize there was such a big industry of that where, I mean, we have TG Cahir, which is the Irish language TV station, but you as an actor on the island of Ireland, you're like, get your chops in the old Gaelic lads. You could be making a few pounds.
Exactly, like that Irish movie I'm talking about paid for my wedding, you know, so it's like, and I remember auditioning for it. I did a self-tape audition, which is the new era of just being able to audition from your kitchen. And I was in New York doing that one-woman show I'm talking about, Alice Milligan, and it was our last show, and we drank till 6 a.m. because we're Irish and we're in New York. And we were like out in our little balcony in like Brooklyn, and it was just class. And my agent emailed me and was all, have you got that self-taped on yet? And I was like, oh shit, I forgot. And it's in Irish too. How the hell am I going to do that? But I was so lucky that the woman, the director of the play I was doing, spoke Irish. So she could do the self-tape with me. And I've watched that self-tape back on my laptop since. And I look like a crazy woman. I've just finished drinking like an hour before. And I'm like this, you know, sort of Constance Markovich type of character where she's like doing drills with guys with hurley bats in the forest, and she's like roaring everybody, but I'm so drunk doing the self tape and I got the part. So I just turned up drunk every day on set, and that that's what they needed.
One of the funny things as well, whenever I was looking at your internet movie database page, you've actually been in two different shows called Penance that are in no way connected.
No way connected, I know. And the other one is an English drama that was only on there about, it was on in like March.
I meant to say, didn't you play a cop in that?
Yes.
Yeah. Have you got a letter yet to tell you to get out of Derry?
No. Do you know how many times I was asked that on set? You can't share this photograph of you in this uniform online. Derry'll kick you out. And I was like, oh, fuck.
You're like, I don't live in Derry. It's fine.
I know. But yeah, it was good fun. I know, but the amount of people, because whenever we went and done the table read of that TV series, one of the old guys who was also playing cop was like, so was there a movie of this before this TV show? Was this a TV show adaptation of the movie or something? And I was like, I don't fucking know. Is it? And he was like, well, you've been in it. And I was like, oh no, mate, you've been on my IMDb. It's a different thing. This is a completely different thing. That's an Irish language movie set in 1916, and this is a sexual drama.
It's Channel 5, you know what I mean? That's what you're going to get. Used to be famous for a bit of tit on a Thursday night.
A wee tit. Not mine. I wasn't sexual on it one bit. I had my cowboy fit on.
Yeah, you would have been doing well to get the stab vest off you.
Yeah, ooh. How sexy. I was just knocking doors and delivering news. That's just funny. Like, me and another actor friend of mine always talk about wanky cop acting. Do you know when you get to play a cop or a solicitor or something and you're just like, excuse me, I've got bad news. Your son's actually missing. So thank you, goodbye. And it's just all like, you just do a wee bit of wanky cop acting. You have to look dead serious all the time and just throwing looks around going, something suspicious is happening here. It's just a wee bit wanky, isn't it? It's very, very, very undemanding of a role.
I was going to say, because one of your earliest TV credits was Next Top Model.
Oh, fuck, yeah.
So is that where you perfected, like, the resting bitch face of that, like, I hate these clothes, that kind of... Can you bring that into the cop of the just general disdain of everything?
It was more like, I hate this entire establishment of Next Top Model. It was awful. Awful.
Yeah, because you're
awful.
Like...
awful. Yeah, and I'm such a different person than I was then. I can't believe I ever put myself in that show. Like, I can't believe I ever did that. The whole time I felt like I was the token, like, just, I was there for entertainment. Because those shows, do you know, I felt I was Wagner. I was like, why am I here? All these girls, like, Amazonian goddesses, you know, just like... you could snap them, they were twigs, but they were beautiful and they were just like perfect. And then I was all, hi everyone. So like, I just try crack jokes and like, I'm way, way too foul mouthed. And funny though, when I got eliminated, if anybody isn't familiar with that show, it's like every week you do photo shoots and challenges and then they eliminate somebody who's really disappointed them. And at mine, Ellen McPherson was the lead judge of my year, and God love her, like, all else, she was taken out of school at about 14 to model, and you can tell.
Glazed over.
Oh my God, like, you could look at her all day long, but you couldn't have a conversation with her. Like, and she was so rude to me. Like, she ran beside me on a treadmill for 20 minutes and never looked at me once. And then, like, completely ignored my existence. I think she must have had it in her contract that we had to be kept as far away from her as possible. But we had a morning off one time, and me and another girl went to the gym, and whilst all the skinny bitches went out for breakfast. How does that work? Anyway, and we went to the gym, and she was there, and she just fucking ignored us. But when she eliminated me, her reason for eliminating me was that I was destined to be an actress, and I had to decide a path. I couldn't be both. And I said to her, but weren't you in Friends? And
you give a lip, were you? You answered back.
Yeah, but it's not even on the show. They didn't put it in. I was like, but weren't you in Friends? And then she was like, yes, but you eliminated.
Do you wanna
go home? I was like,
that's your first ever heckle put down, and it's not even in the fucking show.
I know. I'm raging. It's the only time I've ever been able to do a heckle put down. I don't talk to the audience hardly at all when I do stand up. I'm too scared of them.
You'll get comfortable with it. It's fine. It's okay. But sure, I mean, you gig in, sometimes you get to gig in really lovely places like my comedy club where everybody's nice, so you don't have to worry
about it. Yeah. And McQueen's is a great wee spot, isn't it?
Because they know I'm coming up next and I'll kill them.
Yeah. I just listened to your podcast with Aaron Butler, right?
Yes.
Which is great, by the way. And Aaron's a lovely guy, as we both know. But it bothered me how he says Nuri. Did you notice?
Yeah, he can't say it properly. I have noticed that.
Nuri. What the fuck is that, Aaron? Nuri.
Yeah. But I've had it in my podcast. I can't say anything about it because people in Nuri don't call it Nuri. I'm from...
Do they not?
No, I'm from 2 miles out the road from a little village called Bessbrook. And we say Bessbrook and Nuri. People in Nuri say Nuri.
Do they?
So it's N-U-R-I, fada.
In the pronunciation. So mad.
So
here, I have the same problem as well. I'm from Derry, but there's mad bastards that say it's Londonderry.
It's an oldie, but...
Only joking, everybody.
Do you know the first ever joke that I wrote? And because I'm a lazy writer, it still sometimes gets rolled out. The first ever joke I said was, my name's Darren Matthews, I'm from Newry. If you don't know what that is, you maybe think it's called London Newry. And never fails. Never fucking fails.
That's a great joke. That's great. That deserves praise.
I just thought of something there when you're talking about that the Next Top Model thing, where you're just like, am I here to, you know, what are they going to do, subtitle me? What the fuck?
Yeah, they did.
Did they?
Yeah, they subtitled everyone, but I felt like they started off with me and had to roll it out, to be fair.
It's like, this might look a wee bit sketchy if we just subtitle one person.
Yeah. Like, me what? And the Geordie. Yeah, me and the girl from Newcastle.
But you're just like, why not fucking subtitling her? She's waffling away in the corner here. But how did you kind of get on the path of, I mean, growing up in Derry, I'm assuming it's very much like where I grew up. You don't just go, here, I'm going to be an actor. Because people go, no, you're fucking not.
I know. You know what, as well? Like, I had a very supportive family. I also did very well academically in school. So all my teachers were like, oh, you should be a lawyer. Because I didn't do sciences, I did everything else. So it was like, they were like, that was the path that they were trying to steer, the direction they're trying to steer me towards. But I honestly, right, my choices for university were law and then drama, and I didn't know which one I wanted to do. My dad sat me down one time and was like, doing law is not going to be like Legally Blonde, because I genuinely wanted to wear pencil skirts and be like, no you didn't, in like a courtroom, and I thought it was going to be just the drama of it all. And he was like, if you're looking for the drama of a courtroom, just study drama. So then that's what I did. So I had a very encouraging household, but in school, like, I was not at all, like, I wasn't the drama girl. I wasn't the star of any shows, like, at all. I was the understudy for most things. And we did West Side Story as one of my school plays when I was about 16, and I played Jet Girl number 2. I wasn't even one of the fucking, I like to be in America. I was one of the ones who just stood beside the Jets, and I probably at one stage had a line, but I don't think, like, I wasn't a star at all, still not, but like, I didn't, it wasn't like my teacher's like, she's gonna go far, like, that was not gonna happen.
I think it's like that list of stuff you have to read to kind of cheer yourself up when you're like, this is a fucking disaster, and then people are just like, look, Michael Jordan didn't get picked for his high school basketball team.
Yeah.
Einstein couldn't speak till he was 4. And I'm like, well, I'm 34 and living with my mom. Fuck you.
Yeah. Einstein couldn't speak until he was 4?
Something like that. He didn't speak until he was... But, you know what I mean? He could have just been socially awkward, but he's really good at maths. You know what I mean? It's fine.
Oh, he didn't trust any of the fuckers around him.
It's like, I'm not saying anything because you're going to steal my idea and say it's yours because you're older than me. Fuck you.
Yeah. But have you, as regards stand-up comedy, have you ever acted or performed outside of stand-up, or has that always just been the main thing you've wanted to do?
Always wanted, well, once I started doing comedy, I played music for years before I played, well, music, drums, before I did stand-up, so.
You played,
I
mean, noise.
I played noise. I mean, I counted to 4 behind the talented people. I said, you follow me, lads, and they're like, you follow me, for fuck's sake. No, that's what I did, and then I got into stand-up. Acting wise, I don't think I would have I probably don't have the discipline for it. It'd be too much fucking about. And I would make fun of whenever people get into really like stuff like inside the actor's studio where they're all sitting,
you'd,
you
know, giggle.
Tell me, I'm just like, read the fucking lines, lads. You know what I mean? It would be.
Yeah.
I'm like, right, what is it saying? What's the accent? What do we need to do? So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I'm like that too. Like, I'm not a dramatic, as you'd say whenever you're 15, but I didn't go to drama school. I did a drama degree, but I have always, do you know, when I'm in, I even get like uncomfortable myself when I see other actors like just doing a real deep dive into like 3 lines, and I'm like, mate, you're delivering donuts just like in the scene and then you leave. So just do that. Like, don't talk about this character's wife and kids and it's his fucking trauma as a child. It's all too much. Like, I see people do it all the time. I'm like, if that helps you, that's great. But Jesus, I find that I giggle. I'd be like, oh God, I'm getting so uncomfortable here.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what it was, but I remember seeing interviews with actors before and they were talking about, I can't remember who it was. It's like, you know, these actors that had written books and this, I wanted to be, is it Stanislavski? Is that the one?
Yeah, Stanislavski.
Is that the one where he was like, you have to know what your character has in his pockets and all this stuff? And I was like, fuck the fuck off, would you?
Yeah. And
stuff like that.
I know, and like my friend texted me that I did drama with recently. He was like, do you remember, I think it was Chekhov, I can't remember who, which practitioner it was, but it's called The Theatre of Pain. And I was like, oh, I?
That's actually a Motley Crue album. That's
Oh, is it? No. Is it?
Theatre of Pain is a Motley Crue album, yeah.
Well, it's also a genre of theatre, or like a, I don't know, I really don't remember, because I was too busy uncomfortably laughing when people were trying to be dramatics. but that's a thing. Like, there's just, I mean, I don't know, I think the reason that I dip, you know, my toe in so many ponds is because I'm like, I don't want to be too, like, I want to just do it all and nothing too entirely. Do you know what I mean? I just want to do it all. But I remember even, like, I was always acting first before I started writing or doing stand-up or doing, I do lots of voiceovers or any other things. And I was always concerned that I needed to establish myself in this one field as an actor before I could go into anything else. And that probably comes from the fucking emotional trauma that Elle Macpherson gave me when she told me I had to fucking choose a path. So I was just sticking to acting, even though I probably a lot earlier could have done other things as well that I've only started to do in this past year and a half, when I've realised I don't have to put myself in a box. I don't have to be just an actor. If I can also do stand-up, if I can also write plays, if I can also do voice work, you know, want to do it all. Would love to get into animation.
Oh, like doing the voices for it, or to actually make and creating?
Yeah. Oh, not making it, Jesus, no. But the voices, I'd love to like be like a fucking seahorse or something.
a Pixar movie with a Derry accent.
Yeah. Oh my god, go on, get on my road.
But Finding Nemo 3, but they're off the coast of Donegal looking for something.
Yeah.
Here, this water's wild.
It's fucking
of
freezing.
You need a wetsuit, there, it's fucking freezing out there, boys. You found it out there.
That would be amazing. They're missing a trick.
Well, that show going around the world as well. It's fucking mad to think that something that was produced here, just like, that's on Netflix. People are watching that in South Africa, in Australia.
I know. And like, I would get people messaging me from like, fucking, I was going to say Baghdad, but nobody's ever messaged me from Baghdad. Do you know, like, maybe just like South America and stuff, just being like, oh, you know, I'm your biggest fan from Argentina. And I'm like, that's mental. You're my only fan from Argentina. So I'm sure that does qualify as you being the biggest one as well.
Yeah.
But the show, like, for Derry Girls, it's crazy how well it's done.
That's great. I mean, there's no harm in having yourself attached to something that's really good. It's not, you're just like, oh, this is a really fun drama or a fun comedy, and it's been seen all around the world. It's not like, I used to be a BBC presenter back in the 80s, and you're like, right, Operation U-Trick. Yeah. Okay.
I know, God.
There's no bad thing. But the other thing is as well, and I really enjoy whenever I chat to your gigs as well, is when you talk about like acting is my job and it's what I do. You have that great honesty of it where you're just like, look, I'm in soft border patrol. We're having a bit of fun, bit of improv, bit of comedy. And then you'll go and do a serious movie. You'll go do an Irish language movie, and then you'll do an advert for Little. You know what I mean? So
I know, but that's it. Like, darn, I'm here to earn a living. Do you know what I mean? Like, yes, there are things I turn down. Don't get me wrong. I do say no to some things, you know, despite public opinion. I'll just fucking slap my name on anything. Yeah. There are things that I go like, no, like, no thanks, whatever. But honestly, like, you just need to work. Like, you need to earn a living. It's very hard to earn a living through being a performer. Obviously, I'm sure you know, I know, we all know that. So you just need to not be too fussy. And even like, with regards even doing self-tapes, like, I know people really hate doing self-tapes, and at times it can be a fucking stress, because, you know, you're in your kitchen, it's not where you're living room, it's not where you normally do a bit of acting. You know, maybe your husband or your sister, somebody's behind the camera reading the lines, but they've got to go pick up the kids, so you've got 10 minutes to fucking bash it out. But I just look at it as a chance to do a wee bit of acting. I enjoy being able to go, for the next hour, I get to do a wee bit of acting now, whether I get this job or not.
Well, from that sort of stuff as well, we will sort of explain, because one of the things I do with this podcast is I like people learning about maybe something that they didn't think they were interested in, but then they're like, oh, interesting. So some of the stuff we talked about, acting terminology, a self-tape. Can you just give me a brief example? Not a brief example. Yeah. What is a self-tape? So in the good old days, you went to a casting where the casting director and a video camera, self-tape is, it's your job now?
Yeah. So you basically get a tripod, your phone, set it up, and you just you get sent the scenes, which are called sides, and you record them at home. So it means you get to do them when you go into a casting director office to do an audition, usually a two, if you're lucky, three goes at a sing, but usually two. At home, you could do 20. You could keep doing it until you nail it. The other thing is, so you record that audition yourself and use WeTransfer to send it to your agent, and your agent will forward it on to whoever requested the audition. The only thing is, too, is that you don't get any instant feedback, whereas if you're in a room doing an audition, you do an audition and they can come back to you and go, okay, why are you doing it in Spanish accent? She's from Belfast. Or do you know what I mean? Like, they can come back to you and go, like, give you a bit of advice, and then you go, ah, okay. And then you get a chance to redo it. Whereas once you send that off, you don't get that opportunity to have a bit of discussion with the casting director. So it can be detrimental. It's very difficult. Most people don't, like, everyone's like, fuck, I hate doing self-tapes because it's very unlikely to get a part. But I'll remind them that I, on a balcony, blocked in New York, booked a movie in Irish language that paid for my wedding.
I love that. Not even hungover, still steaming.
Still drunk. Listen, have faith. You can do it.
Oh, that's okay. Well, the other thing is, I mean, the joke I used to like to do is whenever you meet people who are, as you said, drama wankers. And I remember chatting to a guy one time. I remember what he'd been in. You know, somebody with like one TV credit or something. And they were like, oh, yeah. What was the thing he said to me one time? Oh, he was like, oh, yeah, I went to RADA. And I was just like, I didn't know the paramilitaries had a fucking drama school for a lady.
Very good.
Yeah.
RADA's like the creme de la creme of drama schools. That's the thing, too. Like, because like Game of Thrones was filming here for years, and the Fall, things that had reoccurring seasons. Fuck, you used to constantly be like, why don't you try and get a bit in that Game of Thrones? Or also people would tell you, people would be like, why don't you try and get a bit in Game of Thrones? Like, well, God, I hadn't thought of that. I'll phone them. And then they're like, three of my friends are on it. And they all have great parts. They're like, okay, your friends are extras, and that's fine. But that is a different job to an actor. Yeah. It's a great segue if you want to become an actor as a bit of experience on set. Maybe then you can decide if you want to do it or not. Being an extra is a job as well, and it's a completely different job than acting. You're there filling out scenes, and you know, most people want to do it because it's fun and it's exciting, and every day of the week you could be on a different set, you know. And I've gotten to know some extras that are, they've maybe been in three or four shows I've been in, and they're there on them all, and I'm like, isn't that fun? We're like the same extras come here with you on a Lidl ad, and the next week they're with you on a BBC Three thing in the background, and it's mad.
Yeah.
But on the Lidl ad thing too, as I was saying there about like saying no to stuff, I got so much stick after I did the Lidl ad. Like,
why?
Horrifically. Awful. And they cancelled the ad. I got fired.
Hang on. What did you get stick for? What was the problem with, you're a job and actor, what's the issue? Is there like were people looking down on the idea of the job?
No, it was the general public going, this is the worst ad and I have ever produced. One, people were saying that I was doing a fake accent, that's not how people from the north sound, that's not how we sound. And I was like, it fucking is, that's my accent. Right? I was in Belfast International Airport one time, and the security guard moved like the wee snake sort of that you walk through to, whatever you call it, he moved out of the way and was all, I'll not let a movie star queue, you can go through here and skip the queue. And I went, fucking thanks very much. And he goes, but just whatever you do, don't do that Lidl voice. And I was like, that is my actual voice.
Hang on. So as an actor, especially with such a niche accent as a Derry one, you finally get a fucking part, you can just use your own voice, and people complain about it.
Oh, awful. Like, awful. And like, I would just see people tweeting. Like, I saw like journalists tweeting going, fuck that, we're so annoying in that ad with her voice and her accent and all the rest of it. And I was like, they're meant to be heightened comedy. Those ads were meant to be like little funny ads. And we were told that they potentially would run for 3 years, and they ran for 6 months and then they cancelled it. And I swear to God, right, this is what happened. The company are brilliant. Like, Ardmore, he made them, are great, and they did such a great job. And also Michael Lennox, who was the director of Derry Girls, directed those ads, so he cast me and Kerry Quinn and Dan Gordon, and he was great, and I thought he did a great job. And they emailed my agent, like the headquarters from Lidl, and they were like, it's we're canceling these ads. It's too much effort to take all of the photographs of like the actors off the website. You know, we'd have to get a guy to come in and completely reformat the website. How much can we pay just you to keep them there for a year, because they'd have to pay to keep your image on the website for like another year, just so they get maybe a revamp in a year's time.
Yeah.
So my agent came in with a fee. He was like, well, if you pay this, you can keep the stuff on the website. And they came back and they were like, actually, we're just going to pay someone to take them down. And I was like, oh, and it wasn't even that much money. Like, it was fuck all. And I was like, oh my God. So they actively paid someone to delete our legal ads to get rid of them.
You don't see this happening to fucking Elle McPherson, do you?
Oh my God. But I was like, even if it is, okay, let's lean into that. Let's lean into people thinking it's annoying. Let's do go compare. Let's be that guy. It's loads of people are talking about it. There's big billboards everywhere. I thought it was a very successful campaign, but anyway.
Oh, Jesus. Well, one of the things that I saw actually, this was something that occurred to me months ago, and I was like, I need to ask the owner about this. There is nearly a thing where if you say I'm a career actor or this is my job, I saw, yeah. It was like one of the old tabloids, but they were pretty much nearly shaming an actor, somebody who was in like Coronation Street for a year, and they're like, oh my God, he's working.
B&M or something?
Thank you. I just couldn't remember the shop. Like, oh my God, she's working at B&M. I was just like, yeah, she off 1 year's wage out of it. That you can't live on that forever. That's just your part.
No. And exactly. Like Louisa Harland, who plays Orla McCool in Derry Girls, said recently, so, you know, everyone, like those girls, I would be surprised. Like, they probably are only just have given up their day jobs, you know, because they live in London too, except for Jamie Lee. It's a very expensive place to live. You know, it's very, obviously. And Louisa had said that for the first two years, she was still having her full-time bar job, because you film something and you film a full TV show in a month, 6 weeks. You know, what do you do after that? You know, and a Channel 4 group came in for their Christmas party, and she had to serve them. And they were looking at her as if, like, what the fuck are you doing working here? You're Orla McCool and Derry Girls. And she was like, this is so embarrassing, but I shouldn't be embarrassed. And she was looking at them and she said, like, well, you should fucking know. You know what you pay me. That's why I'm working here.
Well, I would have said in that respect, that's proper working class actor. That's not, I'm going to be, we see it in comedy as well. I'm going to be a comedian because if I go on my face, my dad will look after me. Like, we don't have that option. I have a full-time job. My full-time job is not comedy. I love doing comedy, but it's not what I'm not able to financially sustain myself in such a small population for the gigs I can do.
So almost impossible too in this country. There's not enough clubs, not enough gigs, not enough of a scene. You know, there is obviously a lot more of a scene now than there has been in years gone by, but it's almost impossible to sustain that without doing lots of other things without having a radio show, without having lots of other things that are income. Standalone stand-up is extremely, it's almost impossible.
No, I mean, my stand-up is pretty much my fun money. I have a real job that pays my bills. I run my two nights, so that gets me enough money to keep me, and then any other gigs I get myself are what I do. But it's not like, I mean, stuff like that is, you're not paying. I remember seeing the thing about the arts, is like, you're not paying for the person's time, you're paying for their skill set.
Yeah.
You're paying for something that's taken me years that I fucking put in. It's like when I played music, they're like, can you come and sit in and fill in with this band in a bar and we'll give you 50 quid? And I was like, no.
I'm like, no.
Why not? I was like, because see that symbol when I go, psh, that was 150 quid. I'm not, what, I have to fucking do 3 gigs to buy one of them? Fuck off. No.
Exactly. I know. I don't think, like, even, The amount of times I'm sure you've had inquiries too, but like, how much would it cost if we get you to come down to like an hour and a half of stand-up? And you're like, what? Who's doing an hour and a half of stand-up at a corporate gig? What are you talking about? Yeah. And then they go like, we'll pay like £30 an hour. You know, £30 an hour is all right if it's like a restaurant job or something, but fuck a duck, you can't pay somebody £30 an hour for an hour and a half of material. It's a full show.
Yeah. No, you're going to be wanting to do that in a theatre or a club, or you're like, let me, I could organise that myself for fuck's sake. I don't need you to be, do you want to come and stand in front of my mates? I'm just, no, I don't. This isn't something I want to do. But like you're saying, I mean, you need all those different, if you can get a stand-up gig and a few quid in between acting roles, that has to keep you. I mean, both you and your husband are both full-time entertainers. That's your jobs.
Yeah. So, and like, it was very difficult. It's only until this past sort of 2 or 3 years have we been able to be comfortable with that. But beforehand, I genuinely think we decided to go full time in quotation marks before we were full time. We decided to give up all the other jobs too early, in my opinion. Yeah. And we struggled for a long time financially, you know. So I, looking back, should have had a part-time job alongside it for another year or two. Because I gave up my part-time job it's been about 5 or 6 years now that I've been doing this full time, and it's really only been 3 years that I'd be like, okay, I can sustain myself. But don't forget, like, I do lots of other things. I do voiceover, like, I do lots of stuff that's not necessarily just acting. Like, I write a lot of things as well, and I do voiceovers and radio plays and lots of stuff like that, you know.
One of the things is, you were supposed to a show that you were working on, is it still happening? It was later in the year, wasn't it? Weren't you
ones that I've been writing?
The ones you were you not supposed to do, was it Opera House or Lyric? What was the one you were, when I was talking to you, you were working on? What was it? Like Dinner Ladies?
Oh, I've now written a couple shows. So there's Dinner Ladies is a play that I have co-written with Lisa Harker and Sarah Lyle, and that was due to go into the Mac in September and October. We were doing an 8-week run of it. Now, it hasn't actually been cancelled yet. However, if socially distanced audiences are the way we need to go, it's too expensive to put on. There's 5 actors on stage. The production company, it would be too expensive for them to put it on. So I'm currently writing an option one-woman show for that same space of time. We also, Sean and I, have together written 2 Christmas shows. So one is for the Opera House, for the adult Christmas shows, and it's for the small room. And the other one is the adult panto for the waterfront. And we still don't know if they're going to go ahead either.
I know. I was actually chatting because the Sunflower, where I run my little monthly club, they were saying about, they were putting up stuff about, you know, bars reopening on the 20th of July, which will be okay for them because they have an outside space. They have a beer garden and stuff. But my comedy club's upstairs. It only holds 50 people. And I was like,
I know.
I can't financially run it if it can't hold more than 30.
And it wouldn't. Like, I think the way the capacity of most places will be 20% of what it was, including theatres. And you just can't.
Yeah.
Can't run anything. We have to pay people.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, I was trying to work it out. I was trying to do this podcast today. I thought I'd come on and talk to you a bit more about the art form as opposed to, here, life is fucking shit at the minute, isn't it? Because I've been trying to get away from that and have a bit of fucking joy in the podcast. And so thanks for coming on. And actually, it's been nice to have you on and able to sort of talk about the process and how you get into it and what do you do. And also, if you are listening to this and you are talking about going into acting, fucking listen to the owner. Keep your job. Don't be, you're not moving to Hollywood.
No shame in it at all. Yeah.
Well, that's
the thing was, my part-time job was teaching kids drama, and fuck, I couldn't wait to give that up. That's what the thing was. No thanks.
See, that would have been good because doing that job, would you have met more drama wankers doing that? Like the little 15-year-old who's like, I'm going to be the next.
There's definitely a couple of them. And we drama wanker like 7-year-olds as well. Do you know what I mean? Whose mum and dad are like, my child's going to be a star. And you're like, your child is a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
Nope.
Do you ever find, I mean, because you're involved in so many different kind of art forms, do you ever find stand-up is kind of looked down upon? Like, you can't study stand-up, there's no grants for it, that kind of stuff. Do you ever feel like there's a bit lesser?
Entirely. Like, stand-up is so, it's almost fucking discriminated against. Like, there is no help. There's no, the money is not good either, you know what I mean? Like, what people, there seems to be an incredible jump from what you get paid to do gigs and what you'd get for a Netflix special it's like there seems to be an incredible jump. There's no middle ground. It's either badly paid or like serious money, you know what I mean? Just it seems to be an incredible jump, and I think it's single-handedly like the scariest job ever, like, oh my god, except for like fucking, I don't know, being a dentist for a lion or something. I'm sure that's difficult too, but I think it's so, my hat goes off to everybody who's a stand-up comedian. I think I do, I dabble, I do it part-time. I don't think, you know, I don't know if it'll ever be like a big part of my career. Who knows? I am shitting myself to do it again after like the pandemic. Myself. Same. Are you not? Are you
looking forward to it? I was actually sitting the other day and I had to listen to a recording of one of my sets because I was like, I don't remember my own material. I wrote the fucking thing.
I know. I don't remember either. And even adjustments that you've made that you've made a note of somewhere, and then you're all, and you might be doing your first gig afterwards and you'll say something, you're all, oh, I forgot, I thought of something better to say there, and now I've fucked it.
Yeah.
Sean's not looking forward to it either, like he used to read in it. Here, have you done any gigs over Zoom during this?
No, couldn't. I did one thing, but it wasn't strictly comedy. So a mental health charity here in Belfast for Mental Health Awareness Week asked me to, they were like, can you do like 20 minutes? And I was like, lads, I comfortably can't do stand-up. I was like, but I can come on and talk about the subject you're talking about, maybe lighten it up a little bit, tell a few little stories as somebody who's I mean, had mental health issues myself and all that kind of, I was like, I can do that. I can make it relatable. But like, basically it was like a Facebook Live. So for the first minute, I was just like playing my guitar until there were people watching. And then I just went into a bit of
very good.
I was telling a couple of stories and jokes, but and threw a few of my one-liners in, but it wasn't a gig. I don't think I'd be able to do it. And like, I because I'm on my job, I got my furlough wage, so I don't have to chase doing comedy. I'd rather be comfortable and come back, and especially running the things. I've been chatting to Leanne down in Newry and chatting to the guys in the Sunflower. I don't know if I even want to do it. I don't want to risk it for a half a room. I'd like to just be able to come back and have a bit of normality and maybe fucking ban comedians from talking about it.
I know. Even just like the technology side of it, like sometimes, you know, I mean, imagine the sound dipping in and out during your punchlines. Just be awful. I couldn't do it. I've just sat at a side. I'm really looking forward to not being shit scared of doing it again, to like getting a bit of normality into doing it and not being, although to be fair, I've always been shit scared of every single gig I've ever done, like shit scared.
Fear keeps you sharp, because I think there's been maybe 2 to 3 times in 10 years that I've thought, I've got this, and I had not got this. Worst I went gigs, on my face. And you know what? It sometimes it wasn't even anything. I can put my hands up now and say I couldn't blame the audience for that one. That was me. I was lazy. I wasn't selling my own material. I was cocksure about it, and it didn't pay off for me. It was my own fault.
How do you? So I'm always interested to know about other stand-up comedians and how they learn their material. So I down at in Daly's in Omagh. Had a conversation with Shane Todd, and he was all to me, do you practice your material out loud in the house? And I was like, well, yeah, Jesus, that's how I learn it. I practice it out loud. I look at myself in the mirror. And he was like, fuck, that's so mad. I couldn't do that. I just sort of know the points I want to hit and then just go with that. And I was like, no, I think I have like a quite a loose, but a script, you know, and that is how I work. And I think Arn Butler works like that too. A loose script. I know Cormac McDermott does, do you work like that? Do you have a script, or do you go, these are points I'm going to hit? And Alan Irwin just hits points as well.
I can hit points, so I'll know the basis of it. I'll know the punchline, and then the joke's different most nights. Now, that might be a lazy way of doing things. I'm not saying it's right. And also, my sets are never the same, so I'll have all the bits in my head. And as I'm talking, my brain goes, do that one next. Or if that bit's not working, abandon this bit, move over there. It's how busy my head is. So people just see this talking head moving, but my brain's going, oh, fuck, what are you going to do next?
I don't know if it's because I'm so controlling, ask Sean, or that I need to be, I'm so organized, I'm a really organized person, and I feel like maybe I need to know everything, I'm a nosy bitch, I need to know exactly what my set's going to sound like before I go out and say it. Maybe I just don't have the confidence to like, to feel like I would say anything funny if I just spoke, you know what I mean? I don't know.
Maybe you could be bringing some of your acting chops into what you're doing. There's people who've went to drama school to learn to be stand-ups, you know what I mean? So you're incorporating, you're used to learning a script and saying it, whereas you've given yourself that kind of time, but there's more leeway in this. It's like you've allowed room for improv. I mean, you do Soft Border Patrol on BBC. When you were doing that, is that strict script, or are you guys allowed to work around it?
There's no script.
That's what I'm saying. So there you go.
Oh, that's completely improvised. Yeah, but then it wouldn't be. Yeah. Oh, I totally. Like, I know what you mean. Yeah. Like that shows. And I think we could have benefited from a bit of a script. And then you loosely work around it. Now, what we had are like beat sheets with maybe a page long going, this is what the scene is about, but there's no dialogue. You just make up all of your dialogue and you go with it, which is so scary. And also you shoot for like 20 minutes and then reshoot those same angles, different angles of the same scene. You're improvising differently each time, obviously, and you go off in mad tangents and you do whatever, but you don't know what's going to make it to the 3-minute scene that ends up on the screen. You know, you don't know until you watch it with everyone else, which is fucking terrifying.
I know, because you're probably thinking to yourself, I did say something that was really funny. Like I saw the cameraman chuckle, and then they don't use that one. You're like, oh, for fuck.
It happens regularly. Like I do be texting the other actors going, oh, you said this thing about that. Or then I even like message Marie or producer, oh, what happened? That really funny line. And she'd be like, in the context of like, we have to make this scene make sense. And that was a really funny line, but it had nothing to do with anything. Whenever we cut it down to its bare bones. So you do be raging because you'd be like, I was so funny then and it didn't make it. But, yeah. No, it is what it is.
I was going to say, it's good to know that different productions work in different ways, where it's like, just read the script, and this one's like, nah, here's the, get ready for improv, yeah, kids. Because, I mean, you've done sketch comedy as well. You were, and you've done, yeah, so you, anything from even stand-up comedy to sketch to, I mean, you're away over doing dramas. You're all encompassing.
And you know what's the different, whole different ball game too, is when I do give my headpiece, and it's filmed for TV, but in front of a live audience. So it's like, yeah, a piece of theatre. That's why it's so heightened. It's a mega piece of theatre. There's a full audience in front of you, but you, there's also cameras between you and the audience, and you have to work both. And it's such a weird concept. It's thrilling, but it's like you play it like a play. You know, you don't, you just run the whole thing through with small breaks in between.
Yeah, it must be as well. It's kind of, is that kind of like doing stand up where you have to wait and you have to rest for the punchline. So you're just pausing your reaction, and once the crowd dies down, and then if I can, you know, you're just,
yeah, you're riding the laughter, yeah. And those audiences love the guys, and they're like, so, yeah, they're obsessed with them, so they laugh so heartily.
Yeah, because I've watched your episode, The Dairy Girl, that you're in, and it's that thing where you say the line and you get the punchline. Now naturally you wouldn't stand there for that long, but you're like, place that laugh and I need to say the next
one. Yeah. But here, I was on the series before as well, as a police officer, a detective. They didn't give a shit.
Still haven't been put out of Derry. Still haven't been put out.
I know. I was at as a detective. Well, I suppose I know. That's a sec. Well, she was in, like, detectives wear their own clothes, so they're not as, like, you can't point them out as quick enough. But I'm back as a reoccurring role, so when Give My Headpiece returns, I'll be returning with it.
Happy days. That's, well, as a job and actor, more work. Happy days. Yes.
Give me all the work. I know.
Jesus. I think before I let you go, I want to talk a little bit about something that you put up the other day. So because you're a bit more on TV, you have an online presence, so you can, mm-hmm, you can share your stuff. Did you get a bit of flack for going to a protest the other day?
Well, I was at the Black Lives Matter protest in Belfast, the Custom House Square, the one at the weekend, and it was so fucking brilliantly organised, and everybody was socially distanced. There was these X's in the ground, like, if you've seen the photographs of it, was unbelievable. I would have come into contact, closer contact with anyone at Tesco's than I did at that protest. It was brilliant. The police were very, very cooperative and really great as well, so it was great. It was very peaceful. But I had put up the other day on my story, I saw a girl I know had a 30th birthday party with possibly 70 to 100 people there. It was a big fuck off, extravagant, whatever, a huge party. Everyone raved. It was like they were at a fucking wedding. Like, there must have been 20, she must have put up 20 videos of herself online. Everyone arm in arm, jumping up and down. Everybody was more concerned about the fucking garnish on the gin wall, getting a photograph on a fucking flyer hoop, than they give a fuck about anyone's safety in the public. And it was disgusting. I was outraged, like, raging at it. Nobody social distancing. It was like, and they were displaying it all over Facebook. So I had shared this on my story going, I'm so angry, but I don't want to engage in any sort of, I deleted that person from my fucking social media vision. But then I had loads of people messaging me going, but sure, you were at a protest the other day. And I was like, this is what that protest looked like, and shared the photograph of the socially distanced protest. Yeah. So I don't think they're the same thing. Yes, I was breaking the you're not supposed to be at a gathering of more than 6 people, but I do think it's a wee bit more important to go to a Black Lives Matter protest than to have a fucking Coachella themed party in a field.
Well, no, the one I was talking about was because, I mean, I grew up as a little punk rocker, so I think protest is very important. The one that I was shitting myself about was because, as you said, that protest was very well organized, and thank fuck, because when you were like, here's the protest I was at, and as you say, because whenever they were like, I was going to be protests, like, I've been sitting in the house for 12 weeks because I'm asthmatic, so I'm like one of the, you need to be shielded, son, you know, one of those people. And I was like, and then they had this big protest, and I was like, oh my fuck. And then you shared the photo, and I was like, oh, that looks fine, that's okay.
Yeah. Loads of people messaged me after I shared that photograph going, I have not seen this photograph. I have just heard of all 80 fines were given out between Derry and Belfast and blah, blah, blah. The only fine in Derry, I don't know why I wasn't there, but I did see them give out fines to people who were socially distancing. I seen fines issued in Belfast to people who weren't socially distancing. And those are the people who should not be at that protest. Yep. When you think about people who go to protests, they tend to be intelligent, forward-thinking activists who want change for the betterment of the world. They're not idiots who are sliding up and down each other. They are social distancing for the main part.
Yeah. No, I went to, because I was just saying, my uncle passed away a couple of weeks ago, and we had the weirdest funeral, because we had to, we were able to go to the house, But funnily enough, my cousin who works, like they work building roads, he had brought a thing from work, which was like a stand that had this, you know, put out the stuff for sanitizing your hands. So when you came in through the gate, we'd shut the garden off. There was one entrance in. It was like going to work on a building site again. You had to walk in, sort of wash your hands, and then we socially distanced around the garden.
Yeah.
But then, of course, we had to do the thing where we had to carry the coffin. And so I have three brothers.
How do you do that?
I have three brothers, but we live in four different bloody houses. So we were just like, wash your hands. That's all we could do. Just scrub your hands. And then we had to carry my uncle's. But then because we ended up carrying the thing three times because there was obviously less people that were able to do that. And I was like, this is the weirdest thing I've ever been to. So we were doing our best to socially distance in a time. We were just like, this is so weird. And I felt bad because we had organized that as things were kind of, you know, kind of easing off a wee bit. There's been poor buggers that were buried with just a priest and two lads who are going to fill the hole in. That's madness.
Aye, I know. And they had to fucking drag the coffin by a rope. Like, how do you even carry the coffin?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? When funerals are already, in my opinion, fucking weird as it is, that just makes it even weirder. Like, I find funerals just so bizarre. Like, my aunt, my godmother died 2 years ago. And at her funeral, she was a really bad asthmatic. She died of sudden death, just dropped dead. God love her. And at her funeral, the priest, for all the Catholics out there, do you know that thing, all the sort of incense-y, dusty, powdery, smelly stuff? And he was shaking that all over her coffin. And I was like, oh my God. I was giggling, even though I was crying. But I was like, she's really asthmatic. She'd hate that. She'd hate that. Do you know what I mean? And the priest called her the wrong name and gave her the wrong age and all these mad stuff. And I was like, God love him. He's overworked because nobody's joining the priesthood anymore. He does 10 funerals and a christening a day.
Yeah. They're not overworked, okay? I'm telling you now, they're not overworked.
Well, not overworked, but they're burying every fucker.
Yeah, well, that was it. But so, I mean, going forward, I think, will you be able to still do the protest thing if it's organized? Or, I mean, that's what I'm saying. How can the cops come downtown and or go to Derry and give out those fines where you're like, go to the queue for fucking IKEA?
Or go to the beaches where every fucker's having a barbecue with 20 other mates?
I haven't been to a beach yet, but I have seen the 20 mates over. I've even got to the point where I've sort of gone to the, you know, a friend from another house, but we were sitting out in my backyard and having a cup of tea.
That's it.
And my house, you can walk in. There's a side door, so you can walk in the side door, wash your hands, and then walk straight at the back. It's weird enough. We're just like, you know, setting a cup of tea. I went down to see my mum. I haven't got a hug off my mum in fucking months. Went down to see her. I was sitting out in the backyard, and then she left a cup of tea at the back door. Then she backed up. I went up, picked up the tea. Then I backed up, and then she came outside. It was madness.
Sean and I bring our two chairs and a flask of coffee with us whenever we go and have. So we don't even use people's cups. Like, we just make sure we bring our own chairs. So we're not even sitting our arses on someone's chair. And then there's like, you know, a fucking 70 or 80 people at some birthday party that's more important. Drives you mad. But I think as long as the protests remain, like, are the way they were there, that one in Belfast was brilliant. And it was so well organized and everyone was so respectful. And the police were like, if you go in there, you might get a fine. As if like, gone ahead. And then we were like, okay, like they didn't want to. You didn't want to issue fines.
No, I think once you start doing that, then you're just like, are you really going to be
the bad guy?
You give me a fine for this. I'm just like, here, nip on across the weather and just see all them teenagers huddled in groups of fucking 40 exactly. Under the bridge. Go on forward with them, would you?
Oh, don't get me started on the teenagers. They're going to ruin the earth.
I know. What I've been doing, basically, I got a mountain bike, but I can do that on my own. And I go way up into the trails up around. I'm in Finnickey in South Belfast. So if you go out of my house, you go up, there's lovely mountain bike trails and stuff like that. So I'm like, I'm able to do that on my own and I'm not annoying anybody. Or I went with my mate and it's just the two of us. But yeah, there's roving bike gangs in Belfast.
Oh shit.
Of teenagers in the woods just smoking joints and having carriots. And a load of mountain bikes. And I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake, lads. I'm just trying to, like a nice wee peaceful ride through the forest.
I got Sean a boat last week.
I saw
it. It's like a big inflatable boat and it's really heavy duty. It's great. It's the same sort of material that like a jacuzzi would be made out of. And we went out and like the river band. The reason I got him is because I thought Father's Day was last week. So I got him this and I was like, well, I can't hide this fucking boat now. It's in the house. So I know, shit wife. So he'll be getting fuck all in 2 weeks' time. So we took the boat out the other night on the river band and it was great. But there was a, like, there must have been gathered on the like the wee on the edge of the river band, 40 teenagers, music blasting, all drinking, all spit swapping, fucking giving each other 99s. I don't know if that's what they do anymore. But I was like, not one of you fuckers are socially distanced. I'd love to ring all your ma's and dads.
I know. Don't you feel like such an old bastard? I'm 34 and I sent a when I was in the woods the other day, I had to send a photo to Belfast City Council to be like, hey lads, can you help me up, Ben? And I felt like such an old bastard.
Yeah, I know.
Because all the teenagers were drinking and throwing their bottles into the bin and it was fucking flowing out. I was like, this is like an area of outstanding natural beauty. And I was like, can you just come and help me up in, please? Because the teenagers have made it all dirty.
Isn't it mad the things that you like decide that are important now? Like in our street, my brother-in-law lives two doors down and he has like self-appointed, he has appointed himself to be like some fucking chairman of some committee that doesn't exist. And he's always emailing the council going, we need that dog poo bin updated and we need a new bin out in the green and we need the weeds cut and all this sort of stuff. So they've come and there's like a green out my front door or my front and they've put like a big bin now, like a rubbish bin, but it's huge, it's bigger than your average bin. But we have a Facebook group for our street that we started at the start of the pandemic, and there's a woman who is not one bit happy about the bin. She's raging. She measured the bin, right, and then she went and found another bin on another street and took a photograph of it and measured that bin, and she has compared the measurements and posted them in our group going, there, our bin's 17 centimetres higher and 13 centimetres wider than the average bin. What the fuck? She's raging. She's writing the council to come out and remove the bin and replace it with a smaller bin. Like, okay, that's where we are.
Yeah, as somebody who has actually messaged the council to be like, can you help me that bin, please? Priorities, people. Fucking priorities.
That's where we are. I know. Fuck a duck. And then it's so funny because Sean has started making like funny photographs and posting them in the group. He's put a photograph in the group of the large bin and of him abseiling down it. And he's like, guys, I've just abseiled down the bin for charity. And there's like a bit of banter about the bin in the group now, but that's just our straight bonding over this big bin.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Well, it's good that there is some sort of sense of community. One of the things that happened out here, I moved into a new street. So I used to live on the Lisburn Road and I moved up to Finicky. And the first or second week I was here, whatever day VE Day was, the neighbours had a VE Day party out in the, so they were like, initially started as a socially distanced VE Day party. I'm making the dinner and I get a knock on the door. And I just look out because, you know, the frosted glass. And I can just see a t-shirt with a Union Jack on it. And I was like, oh, fuck, they know.
Well, they know I'm here.
I opened the door and I was like, hiya. She was like, we're just having a bit of a VE Day thing. If you want to come. I was like, I'm actually just making my dinner. I goes, but to keep the peace in the street. I was like, I'll come out after. So I got a beer. So it all looked very nice that people were having drinks in VE Day and they were, you know, laughing.
You came out and they were like, get him.
That's what I was worried about, because what I keep saying was the lady said to me, she was just like, even if this isn't your thing, and she pointed at her t-shirt, and I was like, love, you've looked at my fucking head and went, this is not his thing.
Yeah. The brats aren't ginger.
Exactly. So she was, if you know, I was like, yeah, a good way to meet the neighbors and stuff. But obviously then, as people got more pissed, the social distancing started fucking, you know, leaving the control situation. So people would be talking to me, and drunk people want to talk. You're like, let's close to your fucking head. So every time somebody who was drinking was getting closer to me, if they would look around to like show me something, I would take a step back.
Yeah, you feel like you're being so rude. But
I was shitting myself and I was, you know, behaving myself. I didn't go out as the new guy and go, what in the fuck are you doing? So I was just like, nice to meet you, thanks very much. And, you know, clinking tins and then not drinking out of that side of the beer and stuff. And then one of the neighbors was basically, she was just like, you know, I thought this was something they did every year. She was like, you know, I've been here 20 years and we've never done anything like this. And I couldn't help myself. And I just went, and now's the time to start.
And now's the time. God's sake. I know.
I was just
there
like,
was a party in our street for a couple that were supposed to get married and their wedding was cancelled. And then they had a party in their backyard. And I looked out at one point and my brother-in-law was in, or he was in his sumo wrestling outfit, like inflatable sumo wrestling, and I was like, I don't even want to know what's happening out there right now. Is that his way of staying 2 meters away from everyone? If he inflates that outfit, that the belly of it is people can't stand up against it, like that's the way of shielding yourself.
No, that's mad as well. I mean, there's been so much stuff about people not being able to do things, like, I mean, the weddings and stuff. I was supposed to go to Croatia this year, so I've actually just got an email, funnily enough, while I was doing this. My phone blinked up there I'm hopefully getting a refund because we were supposed to go to my brother's stag in Newcastle upon Tyne in March, out the window.
Yeah.
Then he was supposed to get married in Croatia in August. That's not happening either. Now, I know my younger brother doesn't listen to my podcast, so don't ever tell him this if you ever meet him. The money that I saved by not having to pay for his wedding, I bought all the appliances for the house. So, just between me and you. That's between me and you.
What were you using beforehand? Did you not have the appliances?
No, I moved into a brand new house, so I had to buy a fridge, a washing machine, and a tumble dryer. So, moved in and I was like, I'll be a wee bit stretched for cash doing all that together. Yeah. And then he was like, it's next year. And I was like, getting a fancy fridge.
Getting a Smeg.
Oh, God, no, I'm not made of money. Fuck you, it's a Samsung.
No.
Yeah.
I know that's it. The amount of, like, people who were planning their weddings now will not be able to get married for a long time who hadn't already booked it because there'll be such a backlog now. We were supposed to go to a wedding on Easter Monday as well, and we have it booked, and it's now booked for December, but that might not even happen.
But I mean, look at it this way. It gives those people a wee bit of time to figure out if that is really the person you want to spend your life with.
I know.
If you want to know that you're going to spend your life with this person, 12 weeks in the house, just the two of you.
Yeah.
There you go.
Go through a pandemic. That'll sort it out.
Get through a pandemic. What about you? Have you and Sean managed to not murder each other because you're busy doing other bits and bobs?
We spend a lot of time at home doing fuck all anyway. Darn, we're both self-employed. Do you know what I mean? So there's a lot of time where we're just at home all the time anyway. So at the beginning, it didn't feel that much different. Our home life didn't feel that much different. The only thing was that Sean's got three kids and their homeschooling them was a fucking nightmare. That's nobody wants to do that. But we've been grand. We've just been doing bits and pieces around the house. Thankfully enough, a lot of our writing work continued. So those plays that we were writing were still happening. So we were able to continue to work from home, like writing. And I've recorded a few radio shows and stuff, like comedies and dramas from home as well, which has been great. So we've still been able to like work a bit. But I can't wait to like be able to go out and properly socialise with people that's not him. Do you know what I mean?
You know what? That's not a bad thing, because I know your husband and he's a lovely fella. So that's nothing against you, Sean. That's just that woman needs conversation that isn't you talking about fucking Liverpool winning the league. Okay?
Who are you living with?
I have my own house. I moved up to Finicky, so it's.
But you're on your own in the house, are you?
No. I'm not fucking. I would probably have gone mad out here. It's myself and the good lady Dee Dee. So I was making.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't know if you said to guess. I said, God, Matt, it would be very difficult if you were on your own at the minute. Do you know what I mean? You'd really get to know yourself, wouldn't you?
Fucking right. Yeah, doing yoga at the backyard at 6:30 in the morning. What are you doing?
I know. Blocked. Doing auditions.
I know. My expenditure on beer that gets delivered to the house has been worrying. So that's why I went and got the bike. So
it's mad though, because obviously there was such a worry about finances at the start as well before they did the self-employment grant. But you're not spending that much money. It's just booze and hot tubs. That's what you're spending
boats,
your money on.
So you bought a hot tub. See, if you tell me you're a job and actor and you're buying boats and hot tubs, fuck you, the owner of the party.
I am a child with a purse. I'm like, I don't know what to be doing with my money. I'd be like, I'll buy a hot tub. Sean and I are both the same. We'll be like, we'll spend all our money. And then we're like, we were supposed to pay rent. That's funny. We're like mad. We're our money. We just spend it. But we're trying to get better. We're just two kids.
I know, I have that as well, where you buy something. The other thing is as well, like I don't, because I spent so many years traveling with my backpack or just my stuff in my football bag, I don't own fuck all. I've got this podcast mic, this laptop, a mobile phone and clothes, I suppose.
Some clothes.
And I've got a bike. That's what it is.
I know. I know you've got a fancy fridge.
I know. I like the minimalist approach. Like I like the idea of that kind of, if the apocalypse happens, I'll not be raging that there's a load of stuff left in my house and I'd fucking flee into the woods.
That's it. See, Sean likes to think in his head that he's like this man and he'd love to live out in the woods on his own. He never intended to have a family. Like he grew up, like he said to me so many times, growing up, like I didn't want a family. I was just like, I want to be on my own, living off the land, out in a forest somewhere. I was like, well, you know, you're in Craigavon, though, you know, make do. But that's what he would have loved to have done. And we watched the show, I don't know if you've ever seen it, called Alone. Have you ever watched that?
Did you did a sketch with this, didn't you?
No, that was something else.
Sorry. Okay, finish your story.
They wrote it and ended up. Yeah. So that the pit attempt, it's on the History Channel, the pit attempt, 10 survivalists out like in the Arctic or in Patagonia or somewhere random. They just drop them off. They're allowed to have 10 things with them, 10 tools and the clothes on their back. And they try and survive for as long as they can. They build shelters, they live off the land, and they film everything themselves. And it's mental. And I think one time one of the participants lasted like a year with fuck all, like out in the middle of nowhere. Just drop them by a river and they just last. And it's crazy.
Do you win something? Is there a prize for... I was out
there
for
half a million. Half a million.
Holy fuck. And the other people just throw in the towel and be like, fuck that, lads. I want to go home. That kind of stuff.
It's so funny because you see... They see some people go out and they like cut their finger after like 6 or 7 days and they're like, oh my God, if this continues to bleed, I'm going to die. And you're like, no, you're looking a way out. They're like, I can't stay here. I'll get an infection. And you're like, no, you're dying to go home. You're starving. So then they tap out. But then most of the time people have to leave because they've lost too much weight and they get too thin. And I'm like, why are people not watching previous seasons? Pack on the weight before you go out. Yeah. What a great time to be alive if you were able to pack on the weight for a TV show. That's not top model. That's the opposite of top model.
Yeah, if you're going out, definitely 3,000 calories a day for 4 months and then just go nuts, kid.
Go nuts. That's it. But that's a great show. I definitely recommend it if you're into that sort of lifestyle.
Okay, I'll give it a watch. Diona, before I let you go, because I've been keeping you for too long probably, where do we find you online? If we want to find you online to be disgusted at you going to Black Lives Matter marches, where do we look for you?
My Twitter and Instagram are both just Diona Doherty. My pronounced name Doherty, but that's just Derry pronunciation. So it's Doherty. My legal name is Diona Hegarty, but I only use that for doctor's appointments and ringing Chinese's. When I earn money, I do it under Doherty, just in case it all goes tits up there.
That's what I was saying. You don't want to be... I mean, here, Nicole Kidman didn't change her name to Nicole Cruz, and thank fuck.
Exactly. Wouldn't that have been a fucking nightmare? In case Sean fucks off to the forest sometime, I don't want him going off. So, Diona Doherty, that's it, basically.
I've just thought of something as well. You telling Sean that, you know, like, he's not in the woods because he lives in Craigavon. He's definitely in the wild, though. So, there you go.
Oh, yeah. There's definitely, like, wilder beasts about.
Yeah. I'm from... I mean, Sean is from Craigavon in Armagh. I'm from Bessbrook, which is in Armagh as well. And I used to have a joke that I told, which was... you know, people talk about the Bermuda Triangle where weird shit happens. As like, if you look at Craigavon, Lurgan and Portadown, we call that the Bermuda, or instead of the Bermuda Triangle, it's the Balaclava Triangle.
Oh, Jesus. It is a breeding ground. Now, to be fair, Sean would resent that he's not from Craigavon. He's from Ahagallan, which is just outside of Lurgan. But we live in Craigavon because that's where the children go to school. So I had to clarify that to the Gen Pop in case Sean got hate mail.
Ahagallan is the most... townland, middle of nowhere name of a place.
I know, and right beside it is Achilly.
Exactly.
I know.
Which, that's like where my dad's from. My dad's from a place called Lissumman, which is a townland. Now, if you don't know what a townland is, if you're listening to this in a different country, a townland, as I have described it, is a place between two places that's not really a place.
Yeah, isn't it?
Some people just live there, but there's no infrastructure. It's just, you need a name for where you live, and that's just the one they made up for that place.
They don't even put lampposts there. They're like, do they need them?
Yeah.
What are they looking at, realistically?
If there's a chapel and maybe a football field, place. There you go.
Yeah.
Right. So if you're looking to follow Diona's stuff and see what she's been working on and her plays and her comedy, and I will hopefully see you whenever you get back up and running, you'll come down and do McCoo's for me again, won't you?
Yes, absolutely. I've loved the previous goes at McCoo's, so yeah, get me back down. Be great.
Happy days, buddy. Right, so Diona Doherty, follow her on Instagram and Twitter. Not TikTok, because we're too old for that. And nightmare.
See, yeah. I started an account, but I could not figure out how to make a video. I could not figure it out, so I gave up.
Yeah, if it's not self-taping, fuck that.
It's like way more effort. I joined, I got 7 followers in a day, and then I never made anything. I was like, this is too difficult. So no, way too old. I can't learn a new skill like that.
I was going to say, if we want to take any message from this, from your years of plowing away to try and be an artist as your career, if something's too hard, fuck it, give it up.
Give it up. Give it up. There's ain't nobody got time for that. We'll have a sandwich.
Exactly. Guys, as always, if you've enjoyed this episode of Darren Matthews and Sometimes Friends, like, share, and subscribe. And thanks for listening. Diona, thank you very much for coming on to the podcast and having the crack of me. I love that we said we'd record this a bit earlier than we intended, and we ended up just recording for the exact amount of time anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I know. Well, thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
No problem. Guys, as always, thanks for coming back. This thing goes out twice a week at the minute when we're all locked in the house. I'll probably go back to one a week when I'm able to work again. But yeah. I hope you've been enjoying the podcast. Keeping you sane while you're out doing your gardening and you're going for your fucking court-appointed exercise. If you enjoy the podcast as well, I found out there's a thing that if people give me a score on Apple Podcasts, it pushes me up the charts, which I did not know. So if you're listening to this on one of the devil's hand tools or an Apple phone, give us a wee review. 5 stars in the old Apple thing. This is all stuff I'm learning, but doing the podcast for nearly a year, just found this
shit. The whole art form in itself, isn't it?
Nightmare. It's truly a nightmare, but it's been good fun. So thank you for coming on and giving us a bit of insight into how you get into comedy and also your acting career.
Thanks for having me.
No problem. I'm going to go and make another cup of tea. So, Diona, thank you very much. Say bye.
Bye.